Thank you. And it doesn't matter how old you are, I'm going to it, so. Well, I am under 30 now, so. Plus 10. Well, actually, more than 10, sorry. Let's not talk about it. All right. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting, our 1 year of continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscious meeting. And my name's Robin, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is January 26, 2002, so I've met the sobriety requirement, and I've attended a lot of group conscious meetings. If you've never been to one, you need to come. And if you want to hear some interesting stories, I'll talk to you about them after the meeting. I'm definitely an alcoholic, and you know, when I came to AA and I heard people say that they were a grateful alcoholic, I didn't know what the heck they were talking about, because I surely was not grateful that I could no longer drink. You know, drinking was the love of my life. It was the solution for all my problems, and I came in and out of AA for many, many years until I caught alcoholism, which is why I always have people read more about alcoholism, because that's what happened to me. I had to keep drinking until I was finally convinced that I could not drink like other people. I knew I was an alcoholic, but that was that one key that was missing. I was always trying to prove that this time I'll look sexy drinking a glass of Chardonnay. And I always share that I'd start out at Houston's, which is a fine high-end establishment, and at the end of the night I'd end up with Lou's with my pantyhose all torn up and my shoes missing. So that's the truth. And in the end, it was sad, and I wanted to die, and I came in and I asked for help. Smartest thing I ever did. So if you're new, ask for help. That's what we're here for. We want to help you. And I got a sponsor and worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because of that, my life has changed. You know, I met a higher power along the way, and my life's wonderful. So if you're new, just keep coming back. Things can get so much better and interesting. All right. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And now to introduce the speaker. This month, I don't know if you've noticed, I didn't have any guys. Sorry, guys. Because when I came to AA, I didn't like the women. I liked the guys. And what I've found is that I still like you guys. But I found that I always say the men will pat your ass and the women will save your ass. So I just swore two times, broke the rules already. But what I wanted to do was make sure to pick people that when I hear them share, they're excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. You can tell that their life has changed because they came in and they finally did the work, and because of that, their life is different. And Kim, I have been blessed to also work with and have watched her life change, and she has helped me so much. Her and I are both self-employed, so we struggle with financial insecurity together, and it's been such an awesome experience. And with that, I just want to give you Kim, and here you go, Kim.
Hi, my name's Kim, and I am an alcoholic. And grateful to be here. It is an honor to be able to be here tonight and share my story. On the way over here, I was thinking about how I went from where my addiction took me to be able to have the privilege to share my story of hope and solution. And it's an absolute miracle that I'm here today. And it's because of this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is December 17th, 2005, and my home group is the Central Orlando Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell a little bit about what it was like growing up, what happened, and what it's like today. I am a native Floridian, and grew up in a home of four children. I'm the oldest of four. And my dad is an orthopedic surgeon, and my mom was a school teacher. And as my dad's career progressed, my mom became a housewife and raised four children. And early on, I learned to take care of, and had a lot of responsibility at home and raising my brothers and sisters. And perfection was very important in our home. And I always had a feeling of being sad, and just never felt quite right. Always felt like an outsider. Always felt like I couldn't do it right. Always felt short. And all I ever heard growing up was, you should have done it this way, or you could have done it that way, or why don't you have any self-esteem, or, you know. That's what I heard. I know today that the truth is a little different than what my perception was. But I had a great life growing up. I didn't want for anything. I went to private schools. Grew up in church. Everything I did centered around church. All my friends were in church. I had a lot of friends. My dad did a lot of overseas work. So he would take all of us. So I got to travel all over the world growing up. We didn't get a lot of material things, but we got to travel. My parents were very giving people, so I learned how to give. And I learned how to love through them. And I got to watch them. I didn't know it at the time, but do what we talk about here. They did service work. Their lives revolved around service work, and they still do that today. And I'm very grateful today for that example. And I know how to do that. When I got here, you all taught me, but I had seen it before, so it wasn't too difficult for me to learn how to do that. And, you know, just those feelings of always feeling alone, always feeling sad. I was always sad. And I think that I know that I had alcoholic thinking before I ever drank, because I had all those feelings and those thought processes and those character defects and instincts run wild going on before I even drank. And I did well in school and went to college, and I went to Florida State. I did my first 2 years at UCF, and then I went to Florida State. And my parents told me I couldn't be in a sorority. If I wanted to have friends, I had to go to the church. Well, I wasn't going to go to the church, and so I didn't have any friends and isolated. But that's really where I started drinking a little bit. I drank one time in high school, and I hated it. You know, it was one of those senior skip days, go to the beach, and I hated it. I hated the taste of alcohol. I was not interested in it at all. But when I got to college, the thing to do was go out with the girls and guys, and, you know, everything centered around alcohol. And I remember we went to Bennigan's, and my friends ordered iced tea, so I ordered Diet Coke. Well, the waiter informed me they were drinking alcohol Long Island iced tea, so I said, I'll have one of those. Well, three of those later, puking in the parking lot was my first experience with alcohol. And, you know, I just never drank that much. I just drank when everybody else was drinking, but it wasn't out of hand or anything like that. And I always isolated. I always felt less than. And I was always scared. And I managed to graduate from college, and I moved back home with my parents, and decided I needed to get married, because that would be the solution. Because if I had a man in my life, I would be complete. I bet some of you girls can relate to that. And so I did exactly that. And in the meantime, I went back to school because I didn't like what I had, my degree was in. I didn't like that, so I went back to school, got another degree, then I got married. And you know what? I got married, I had the house, I had the diamond, I had the car, I had all that stuff, and I was miserable. Absolutely miserable. I was not getting enough attention, and I was expecting him to make me feel better about who I am. And nobody could make me feel better. Nothing was making me feel better. None of all the education I had, all the jobs I had, the husband that I had, nothing was making me feel loved. I was searching for love. What I didn't know is that I had to get that from the inside. And that search would go on for 20 years. And I drank occasionally at that time. And then he would work all the time because, you know, he was trying to provide and have a career and make something of his life. And it's all about me. Why are you coming home so late? And I'm sitting at home. I wasn't working. Or poor Kim. My whole life I felt sorry for myself. You know, I'm traveling all over the world. I live in a home on the lake. We go to the beach at a condo every summer or whenever. And, you know, I don't have to work. And poor, pitiful Kim. If you only had my life. So, my husband was gone all the time. And then I would go to church with my family. You know, church was, everything was about church. And there I met. I met the guy who was on work release. he just gotten out of jail for selling drugs. He got busted for selling drugs. And he was so exciting to me. I've never met anybody that even smoked. And he'd gotten out of jail. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. So, I finally was loved for the person I am, and I left the husband to go with him down a dark, dark road. And for my drinking escalated. I just drank all the time. I was trying to hold a job, and I had gotten so drunk one night, you know, when the room starts spinning and you wanted to stop. And he said, try this. And I was desperate for the room to stop spinning. So I tried that, and I loved that. And drugs became a huge part of my story. But I would never have done the drugs if I hadn't been drunk. And I continued on that road. And it really got bad. And I moved out. I got an apartment with a girl. I divorced my husband, got an apartment with my girl, proceeded to continue dating this guy, the drug dealer. And you can imagine what my parents went through when I walked through the door and I weighed 15 pounds less than I did 2 months prior. And they knew something was wrong. And I went to my first treatment center then. And I was there for about a week. And I called the boyfriend and I said, come get me. And I snuck out and he picked me up. And couldn't hold a job. But I did go back to school. School was always the answer. But what's amazing to me is so many of us in our addiction, we find careers. We managed to go to school and graduate and find careers, and I found, I went to culinary school, and it was such a gift, and that's what I do today, and I absolutely love what I do today. It is such a blessing that I was able to get that degree and graduate with honors in the midst of doing everything that I was doing. It's just an absolute miracle, and I know God was there with me. So, went to culinary school for 2 years and still this boyfriend, and on and on and on and on it goes, and it just gets, the consequences start coming. I can't keep a job. I mean, I get fired. I walk off jobs quite often because I just can't take it anymore because you looked at me the wrong way and you're mean. And then, oh, poor Kim. Don't you know who I am? My dad is a doctor, you know. And I started at the Ritz-Carlton when I got out of school, and I ended up working at Mom and Pop shucking oysters. That's what happened with me. That's where my addiction took me. And it got to the point where I just couldn't even work. And I had finally, you know, when you finally get the guy, life is going to be better. You finally get the job, which is a lot of where my self-worth comes from, is what, how much money I make and what I do for a living. I finally had arrived. I finally got the big job with the big salary. and I moved back in with my parents. And that's another thing I did. I would move back and forth to St. Augustine to Orlando, St. Augustine to Orlando, and I lived in condos overlooking the beach and still was miserable, lonely, desperate, didn't fit in, poor Kim. And so I moved in with my parents to take this job in Orlando. And my dad said, "You won't be there for long." And I thought it was because he thought I was so fabulous that I would get a promotion and go to another job. I know now what he was talking about. Because a few weeks later, I got fired. At this point, I'm drinking all day. I have the mini bottles in my purse. I cannot go through the day without drinking. I have to stop on the way home and get the pint-sized vodka or whatever, put it in my purse and sneak it in the house and sit in the closet and drink. And all the while, my parents know I have a drinking problem. I don't know that, I haven't figured out at this point that my problems are directly related to my drinking. I have not figured that out yet. And I got fired, and like so many times in my life, do I get gas or do I buy alcohol? Well, I gotta buy alcohol. And I ran out of gas on the way home after being fired. My mom has to come get me. And she finds the bottle of vodka in my purse. And that night when my dad got home, he said, "You're either going to treatment or we're kicking you out." Not sure. I'm not kidding. I'm not sure. I don't want to be an alcoholic. I am not an alcoholic. So I called the treatment center to find out, you know, I don't know what, but I told them I had to call them back because I wasn't sure if I belonged there or not. And I finally decided that maybe I should go. And I went, and my sister was out in California where I went, and my sister went with me. And we were there for 2 days before I was to be admitted. So, like every good alcoholic that knows that the drinking is going to end, I was going to drink as much as I could and proceeded to do that to my poor sister. And the morning I was to go into treatment, I took the keys while she was sleeping of the rental car and I drove to the grocery store where they sell liquor. And I bought whatever, I don't know what I bought. I bought something and I drank it and I went back out because I needed more. And I got in the closet, in the corner of the closet, because the idea of never drinking again was too scary for me. Alcohol had become my master, my best friend, my love, my solution to everything. It made all that pain, all that loneliness, all that despair, all that less than, not good enough, all that go away. I didn't have to feel anything, and I didn't have to feel self-hatred like I did when I was sober. So I got that, and I sat in the corner, and I proceeded to drink it. When my sister woke up, she was not a happy girl, and she was so angry with me and so hurt and so sad. And she drove me there, but by the time we got there, I could not even walk. I was so drunk. They had to bring the wheelchair out and wheel me into the treatment center. And I also had, this how sick I was. My thinking was, well, I wasn't even thinking. I had to buy a vodka in my purse because I was going to take that with me. They even admitted me and took me into the room, and she's going through my purse and she's telling me that we need to get rid of this. And I'm like watching her pour down my beloved vodka down the sink. So I was in treatment and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I went to a halfway house after that, and I managed to stay sober for about 3 months, but I went back to the boyfriend, to Florida. Same place, same people, with the idea that it would be different this time, because I always had a plan. Mind you, they told me while I was in treatment that it would not be a good idea to go back with this guy. And I would hear that for years and years later. And years down the road, I'm still back to the same old thing. The day I get back to Florida, I'm drinking and drugging again. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. Years go by. I go to another treatment center. I'm finally sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I'm at the treatment center for 9 months. My first pass out, go with a boyfriend, drinking and drugging. I proceeded to live in that treatment center and do that for 9 more months till I graduated, and nobody knew. And the guilt and shame that I carried living the lie was huge. And I eventually got arrested, and that's when the jig was up, and that's when they figured it out. You know, this time, I'm just going to do this real quick, get on with it. And the way it works for me, when I mess up, I really, really mess up. I was to cater an event for the whole weekend at this treatment center, but I was sitting in jail. All right? And the thing, the sick part of it all is, I got out of jail in time to pull it off, but the very thing I went to jail for, I had to go drink some more. And I could have salvaged it, but I was thinking about me, and I was so ashamed. I was laying in that, or sitting in that holding cell, looking around, going, how did I go from being a doctor's daughter, traveling all over the world, going to church, doing well in school, to sitting in a jail cell? How does that happen? How does a girl like me go to a place like that? It's addiction. Addiction knows no boundaries. It touches all of us. It doesn't matter what we do, where we come from, what race or nationality we are. And that wasn't enough for me. And I kept going, and I kept failing the drug test. By this time, I'm in drug court. I kept failing the drug test. I couldn't stop drinking. And something happened where I'd been up for a few nights with the boyfriend. And I would think that if I could just get him out of my life, if he would just go to Alcoholics Anonymous with me, we could get sober together. I had a plan because I did not want to leave that relationship. It was too scary for me. Because without a guy, I'm nothing. Without a great job, I'm nothing. And we'd been up for several days, and I woke up to a knock at the door. And it was December 17, 2005. By this time, I'd been unemployable for a while. My car was gone. The car that my dad gave me as a gift because he loved me so much. He wanted me to have good transportation. I didn't have that anymore. I gave it away. I'd given away my career, my self-worth, my self-respect, the opportunity to have children. I'd been a bad sister, a bad daughter. And I heard a knock at the door, and I'm like, oh crap, who's this? And it was my mother. And for a couple of weeks prior to that, every night I would lay in the bed when all the alcohol was gone, and I'd curl up in a ball, literally every single night, and pray to God, I am so sorry. Please help me. And I just wanted to die. I don't think that people know the dark, lonely place that we go. That place of hopelessness and despair that addiction takes us, that nobody understands but us. And there doesn't seem a way out, because I didn't have a relationship with God. All I knew was I had to do it. Whatever it was, I had to do it, because nobody else was going to do it for me, and I didn't know how I was going to get out of this mess. And my mom was at the door, and she'd been going to Al-Anon, and she says that she just threw everything that she knew about Al-Anon out the window. And my mother never stopped by unannounced, because she didn't want to see her daughter in the state that I had was probably in most of the time. But she prayed on the way over there, and she said, I'm not leaving till you get in the car. I said, okay. I totally surrendered. I didn't realize how much I surrendered, but I got my stuff, and I went to their house. And I had to go to jail, and it was Christmas time, and I knew I had to go to jail because I had yet failed another test. And I stayed with them, and it was Christmas, and I had to tell them the truth. I had to tell them that I had to go to jail. My poor dad standing there with tears in his eyes, and my mom, of course, is just, you know, but I knew that it was what I had to do. And prior to that, I'd gone to an Al-Anon meeting with them because it was easier for me to go to Al-Anon at this time. Because, I don't know, anyway, who knows what my head was thinking. But I'm sitting in this Al-Anon meeting, and in walks the guy from drug court, the guy that runs it. And I was so embarrassed that I failed the test again, so of course I had to tell him all about it. And he said, you know what? Why don't you quit worrying about what everybody thinks and just make a decision about what you want to do? And that was God speaking through him. And I went to jail, and I got to spend New Year's Eve in jail and New Year's Day in jail, 2006. But that's where I had to go. I absolutely had to go to jail. And when I was in jail, I was grateful. I did a gratitude list. I found a little tiny piece of paper, scratching stuff down. I knew if I could get through this, that I was home free. And in jail, I made a decision that I was going to get sober, and I made a decision that I was leaving that boyfriend of 20 years. And when I got out of jail, the first thing I did was call that boy on the phone and tell him I was done. And that was a miracle. And before I went to jail, I went to a meeting for the first time. I was sober for 2 weeks, but I had not gone to a meeting yet because I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay sober or not. I was still contemplating having a big party when I got out of jail to celebrate. What I was celebrating, I don't know, my demise, I guess. But I walked into this room at 6:30 in the morning, and the guy chairing the meeting was somebody who had gone to the same treatment center as I did, but he'd been sober for 20 years. And he'd come by work and try to help me, and I just wasn't interested. And he said I was the best thing he'd ever seen. When I walked in that meeting, he was chairing it. He thought I was dead. And I was spiritually dead. Dead on the inside. But that's another, God shows up all over the place. And I didn't realize it till I got sober for a little while. And that started my sobriety. So I finally finished drug court. I think I was there longer than any human ever. It's supposed to be like a 9-month thing. I was there for like 18 months, something nuts. And I lived with my parents. So I lived with my parents in what I call Barb and Don Treatment Center. I had drug court. I went back to that treatment center. I was the first person they let go back, because many of us had relapsed. They let me go back and do aftercare. I had a drug therapist. And I had a sponsor. I had a village. I needed a village to keep me sober and help me stay sober. And I wanted it so bad. I was so desperate that I did whatever was asked of me. And I started working the steps. And the sponsor I had at the time was not really available. So I got another sponsor. And I learned a lot about honesty, because the police called me, and I was afraid to call them because of my car. And I called my sponsor and said, I don't want to call them because I might have to go to court because there's something about a subpoena or something, you know. And I knew I had lied to the police, and I was afraid. But what turns out is, these are the kind of characters I was hanging out with. They found my car, which I had given away, with a gun under the seat. And bullet holes in it, and the people who had my car were in a shooting guns with the police, whatever, however you say that. Anyway, so that's the kind of people. God was there in my life. I could have died over and over, but I had the audacity to be pissed off with God when I got here because he wouldn't get me sober. And then we read how it works, and we read the promises, and it tells me I have to do a little bit of work. Oh, there's a thought. I have to take a little action. First action was to quit drinking. And I totally surrendered. I got a sponsor, and that was my higher power at the time. I believed in God, but I didn't know how to trust God. All I knew was self-reliance. And this sponsor wasn't available as much as I needed, so I got another sponsor. And I started working the steps. And my life started changing. And I needed to get a job. I'm one day in a jail, and my mom's like, oh, I circled some things in the newspaper for you to get a job. And I'm like, what do you mean a job? I need to sleep. I haven't slept in 20 years. I got to work. She made me work. She told me I had to go to work. And I was not happy. I was also unemployable. And the only job I could find was as a cashier. Doctor's daughter, highly educated. Don't you know who I am? And all I can do is cashier. And my brain, from all the alcohol I drank, I couldn't even remember the money. Like when you look at the receipt, I had to look at the receipt and the money and receipt and money to make sure I gave them back to Ray Change. I went back to that same job to fill in a year later, and it was not the same. So I was happy to know my brain was functioning a little bit better. Thank God for sobriety. Anyway, and I got promoted, and then I got another promotion. And I noticed that people were attracted to me. They liked being around me. And my boss said to me one day, now, I did not like this job as a cashier. And, of course, it was in the Dr. Phillips area, so I got to be around all these people that had all these things that I wanted and I couldn't have. And so I also learned that work was not about money. For me at this point, it was about how to work well with others. You know, that top of the heap, bottom of the heap, be a team player. I learned that. I was fussing about somebody not working, doing what I thought they should do. My sponsor told me to write down the perfect employee. And I read the list to her, and she said, well, are you that? And I was like, oh, okay. And people didn't show up to work like I used to not. And I couldn't get mad. It was my time to pull the slack. And my boss came up to me one day, and he said, I really love your spirit. You have such great energy. And I thought, if you only knew. The third step prayer works wonders for jobs you don't like. And it was because of this program. And my whole life just started changing. And what I learned was the humility that I had. I was willing to do this job. I had no idea that several years later, I would meet somebody at this job that catapulted me into the career that I have today. Who else does that but God? You know, I couldn't even orchestrate something as beautiful as that, but I had to have the willingness and the humility that this program has offered me and taught me to be put in a position for God to use me and to bring people into my life. I am amazed at the kind of people that I have in my life that help me because they want to. It's just absolutely mind-boggling to see where I come from. That cashier who couldn't remember to change, to a businesswoman who owns her own business and manages money, manages other people's money. And you know what? When I start taking deposits, I'm like, oh my gosh, these people are giving me money. They're trusting me with their money. Do they know who I am? Oh my gosh. And you know what? I'm honest. I show up and I do the job, and they pay me for it. I don't take their money, and I do the best that I know how to do. And then somewhere along the line, you know, sobriety's great and tootling along, and then it's like, whoo, I need a boyfriend. And I had a sponsor who told me that I did not need to put all my eggs in the boy basket. And I hung up on her. She made me mad. What is she thinks she is. She does not know what she's talking about. Because I thought that all I had to do was come here and get sober. I didn't realize, I really didn't realize all the stuff that I had to work through. And I proceeded on this relationship that was really sick because I wanted to do what I wanted to do and you didn't know what you were talking about. I had no humility. I had no willingness. And the bottom line was, I didn't trust God. I was in total self-will. And it was really scary for a very long time. And what I learned through that was that it was a miracle that I stayed sober. But I believe in my heart of hearts the reason I stayed sober was because of honesty. I learned early on that honesty is vital. I wasn't honest and I couldn't stay sober. I got here and I was honest about everything. In the first paragraph in the chapter of How It Works, honesty is there three times. Rigorous honesty. And I had to be rigorously honest about this relationship because I was so ashamed, but I knew if I wasn't, that I might use. And somewhere in there, I got some self-respect and self-love, and I was able to trust God enough to walk away. And I was scared to death. But you know what happened? I trusted God, and I trusted you all. And I fell into the arms of all the people here in AA. And I held on tight to this program, and you guys loved me through it. And on the other side of that, I got self-respect, self-love, and I pretty much enjoyed being by myself. If I don't do the inside stuff, it's not gonna. I'm not gonna get that. Doesn't come back to me. You know, I gotta do the inside stuff. I had to do something different, and I did, but it was so scary. And now, you know, I like who I am today. And people are attracted to that. And I get to share. That line in the third step that says, help me with my difficulties so I may show others of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. I get it now. I get it. I get to do that because I walked through some stuff sober. That's the deal. I got to walk through it sober. If I walk through it sober, I get to grow and get to help other people. And that's the miracle of this. I remember I was a year sober, not even a year sober. I was a few months sober. We'd gone to that women's retreat down in Boca. And my sponsor told me, next year you'll be bringing a sponsee here. It's like, what are you kidding? I never dreamed in a million years that I would have anything to offer. And I love being a sponsor. Sponsorship I take pretty serious because it's my job to teach people what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps are what is the solution. Not the fellowship, but the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I don't know what they are and I don't go out of the book, how am I going to help somebody? And it has been an absolute joy to be able to sponsor women and watch them grow and watch them hang in there when the times are tough. And they hang in there, they keep walking, and they get on the other side of it because they want to stay sober just like I did. They were desperate. And it is an absolute blessing and a privilege to be a sponsor. And it is the part for me when I sponsored my first girl. That part where it says we don't wish to shut the door on our past. For a long time I wanted to shut the door on my past. I was so full of shame and guilt. And when I sponsored her, I didn't have that anymore. It went away. And that is a gift too. And I thought that when I came here, it was the absolute worst thing I could be as an alcoholic. And I didn't like being an alcoholic for a really long time. Today, I am very grateful to be an alcoholic because I get to have this God of my understanding. I get to have this fabulous life. I get to have peace and joy and fun without drinking. And I get to know who I am. I didn't know who I was. And it took me getting free of all those outside issues that I thought that I needed to learn how to enjoy life. I said somewhere in one of our literature, 12 and 12, our big book, about how we hated life. And it was just something to be dreaded and dredged through. And that's exactly what my life was like. But it's not like that today. I know what alcoholism has to offer me. I know what it has. I've already been there. It's pure hell. But the few years that I've been sober, there's been some really exciting and awesome and powerful things that sobriety has to offer. And I really would like to stick around and find out what all God has to offer me. Because I already know what the other road leads. And I know for me, I've already done it. Jails and institutions. I know what's left. But I want to stay here. Because I think that there's a whole lot more fun and excitement and growth to come. And I am so grateful to be here. And I thank you for letting me share. And I have one more thing I want to read to you before I close. It's on page 100. And it's one of my favorite readings. And it says, if I can see it, both you and the new man must walk day by day in this path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us, we would put ourselves in God's hands, were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Thank you.